This is the Lean Discovery Applied podcast with Clinton Sanko, Baker Donaldson's e-discovery officer. In season one of Sitting with the C-Suite, Clinton and guests will explore the e-discovery industry's past, present, and future, largely through the eyes of the executives responsible for the technology and services underlying virtually every e-discovery project.
Hello, I'm Clinton Sanko, and welcome to the Lean Discovery Series, Sitting with the C-Suite, where we are committed to unraveling e-discovery one interview at a time. Today, we are joined by Kiwi Camera, a lawyer and technologist who is the CEO of Disco, a company he founded in 2013. Join me in welcoming Kiwi to the show.
Thanks for having me, Clinton.
Absolutely. Kiwi, if we could start, can you give our listeners just a thumbnail sketch of Disco as a company as it sits now, where you're based, the scope of your services, and your general focus?
Sure. So we're based in Austin, Texas. We operate everywhere in the United States, as well as Canada and Europe through an office in London. We're a full-service e-discovery company, so we handle everything from collection and ingest, processing, review, productions. We've got a proprietary software platform called Disco eDiscovery. In addition to that, we offer the usual range of professional services, from project management to data operations, a full managed review operation where we offer flat fee per document managed review, and a suite of tools for case management, both before and after eDiscovery, that we call Case Builder.
Kiwi, tell us a little bit about your client base. I obviously can see on your website, and I know from industry knowledge that you serve a variety of different types of clients, but give us a sense of your client base.
Sure. So we work with, I think, between 600 and 700 different customers now. We work with big corporates in every major vertical that are exposed to litigation, investigations, or other legal reviews, as well as the law firms that represent them. And so that includes, you know, here in the U.S., a large part of the Am Law 200, as well as a wide range of litigation boutiques that handle that kind of document and so forth.
You start Disco in 2012. I think at that point you had your own law firm in Austin, Texas. What caused you to jump into the e-discovery space? Obviously, with a computer science background, you had the understanding of computer systems and how that all works. But what caused you, what need did you see that Disco was filling? And kind of give us a sense of the competitive landscape at that point in time when you started Disco.
Yeah, it's fun to think back on it. You know, quite honestly, I had a commercial litigation practice, but I did not think too much about e-discovery until my largest client as a lawyer came in and they asked us to have a holistic look at their e-discovery program and their e-discovery spend and see if we had any recommendations to make, probably similar to some engagements that you've done. And so we did that. And that's really the first time that I systematically took demos from everybody in the space. Up to that point, I had personally used Relativity a lot through a variety of service providers, Clearwell and Concordance, been very satisfied with those platforms. And honestly, our number one complaint was performance. You know, you would sit there and you would watch this, and it would be so frustrating to run searches or just view documents that I was one of those lawyers who would demand that everything be blown back to paper, right? I would look at things in paper and some poor person on the team would have to somehow get that back into the database. And it was just for us an unusable user interface. And so anyway, we took a look systematically at the market at that time and sort of famous last words, we said, well, none of these things seem very good. Could we think about doing something better? And so we told that client that if they would basically sign up sight unseen, we would take a stab at building a custom solution for them, which, you know, now that I know about the space, that sounds like something completely ridiculous. But at the time, I really didn't know too much about eDiscovery. And so we jumped in and we did it. And that early product was limited in many ways, but it was blazing fast and super easy for the lawyers and our case teams to use. And so we loved using it for that client. The client loved using it. It kind of spread throughout the rest of our firm. And then in 2013, we spun it out and started selling to the public. And over the course of that year, you know, we got our first few customers and really our first big deal, if you remember, it was the bankruptcy of Dewey and LaBeouf. And so we were against, all the big providers in the space for that deal. And we won in large part because of that performance and ease of use difference. That's still, I think, very much a signature of DISCO. It's a product that the end users, the lawyers, really love using. And so that's when I think I became convinced that we really had something here. And I got excited, not just about building a big e-discovery company, but about how much of a difference having this tool that was purpose-built the way we practiced, how much of a difference that made to my ability to serve our clients. And so I got excited, not just e-discovery, but what other tools can we build in the legal technology space that can automate away the parts of the practice that aren't why anybody. So that's kind of the animating vision for DISCO, right? It's starting with e-discovery, but thinking about broadening our technology offerings over time to really give lawyers the tools they wish they had so they can focus on delivering great legal outcomes for clients.
So looking back at that version 1.0 and you're deciding what feature set to build in there, and you wanted to keep it blazing fast so you could get that quick interaction, quick decisions with the documents, what were the features that you focused on then? Because I just saw a demo of DISCO this week just to kind of refresh before our interview. And of course, the feature set is much broader now.
Yeah, we used to call the demo search, review, produce, because that's all there was. Many things that you would regard as basic and maybe even completely non-negotiable, things like batching. There was no batching system, right? There were no review metrics to speak of. None of the fancy analytics that are in the product today were there then. None of that was there. And yet this case, tens of millions of documents, and we still won, right? So why did we win? It was because, what we did initially was to fix the experiences that lawyers use every minute, every day, right? So really easy and blazing fast. Make reviewing documents really easy and blazing fast. And honestly, that's what we brought to market in the first version of the product. And it was enough to hook people. Now, obviously, we got all kinds of feature requests and we've broadened the platform immensely from there. Focus on making the experience that lawyers feel every day feel as pleasant as possible, given that it's a discovery. I think that really goes to the heart of what we're trying to achieve in our product.
So looking at DISCO, the product and the company today, are there any particular kinds of clients or cases that you feel that your product is particularly differentiated in the market, particularly well suited for, that you guys would see as a key industry or vertical that you would be looking for adoption within?
It's not any specific industry or vertical. But I think what really sets us apart in the modern competitive landscape is a couple of things, right? First, we offer a truly integrated experience. So there's no, process in one tool, then do review in another tool, then maybe shuffle data around to get analytics from a third tool and put that back. We don't have any of that, right? It's one platform, which makes it very easy for a case team to track data, to deal with rolling data, and just to be able to have at their fingertips all the tools they want without having to rely on a heavy services layer to move things from one place to the other. Projects where folks really want to rely heavily on some of the things that in other systems are plugins, those are a great fit for DISCO. Another is cloud, right? And this is something that COVID has only brought further to the forefront. But because the platform's built natively in the cloud, work from home was no issue for us at all. People get the same performance that they're used to, and that performance across a wide range of parts of the product is dramatically better than what many people are used to in legacy systems. Right? We started out being blazing fast at search and document rendering, but we've now carried that same performance advantage to things like ingest and processing, productions, mass actions and databases, the speed with which our AI models learn, and all that is made possible by that underlying cloud platform that we've invested in over the years. So again, it's not really a specific segment, but I think it's folks looking to make that jump to an integrated cloud approach to e-discovery.
Which really kind of leads me into my next question, Kiwi. Obviously, you know, Relativity for years has kind of been known as being sold through channel partners. So if you wanted to buy Relativity, you did it through a channel partner. And I think partly that's been changing over the last couple of years with Rel One and the adoption of that kind of moving more to direct engagement. DISCO has always had a reputation as being a direct engagement, obviously to kind of leverage some of those things that you just spoke of. But my understanding is that you guys do have some trusted channel partners now. Tell me a little bit about your current kind of roadmap in terms of service provision when it comes to working direct or with channel partners. And do you see any advantages to clients buying direct from CS DISCO as opposed to waiting for maybe a channel partner that they're more familiar with and buying through that?
So our goal, you know, in our channel program is to make sure clients have the same terrific experience, whether they buy from us or whether they buy from one of our partners. So I don't think there's really any difference there that should be concerned about. It's interesting, you know, while the bulk of our business is direct, and we're probably the opposite of Relativity in that respect, we have had a channel program dating all the way back to 2013. And when we first got started, we tended to work with these smaller regional or city-specific channel partners. And, you know, one of the things that I'm proud about is that a lot of these folks have managed to build really material businesses, competing with lots of the guys in the space and being able to do that by leveraging our platform. More recently, we've moved that channel program up market. And started working with some of the larger national and international providers. And that's an area where we intend to continue doubling down our focus. You know, I think it's no secret that some of the recent business model changes that some of our competitors have not gone over well with the channel. And we hope to provide a credible alternative for folks who are looking again to make that jump to the next generation of product into an integrated cloud environment.
So obviously you see a lot of advantages to DISCO and the technology, but if we set aside DISCO and maybe even e-discovery technology in general, if you were sitting down with an in-house counsel and you're reacting to this global pandemic, which has caused delays in a lot of cases, budgetary crunches in others, if you were going to be speaking to them just in general and you were going to talk to them about ways that they could drive more efficiencies, more value, eliminate more waste, what would be your key recommendations outside of a technology change to manage through this COVID crisis with the need to do e-discovery in a continued basis?
Three things. You know, I'm obviously a bit biased. I think a technology change is a key part of all of the three things. But number one is if you look at where corporate legal departments are spending money, the e-discovery spend is dwarfed by the review spend. Right? That's always been true. So the first place that I would look for savings is in review. And there are a couple of things to do here. One is to make sure that the managed review partners or the law firms that you're working with are leveraging the best technology. And whether that's DISCO or someone else, right, we find that using the best technology can deliver 50% plus savings on that spend. That's hard dollars that are realizable right out of the bat. Second is leveraging the fact that we can now train AI models on one case or three cases or five cases and use them on the next case that comes. So you're effectively getting leverage from the lawyer review work that you paid for on those first set of cases on the next set of cases and are able to identify legally important documents without any incremental review spend for the next project. So in the review space, I think those are two big things that will move the needle immediately. Number two is controlling your data, right? So whether it's DISCO or somebody else, the benefit of a corporate legal department picking a platform that meets their needs and centralizing on it means that they're gonna save money, but they're also gonna be in a much better position to secure, control how that data is used, control who sees it, and deal with its eventual disposition, whether it's being reused in other litigation or put to bed after litigation is over. So I think one thing you'll see is an increase in the rate of this kind of cloud adoption and the adoption of, again, a centralized repository for corporate data. Those would be the two things that I would do if I were in that seat.
Drill down a little bit on DISCO's specific current abilities to leverage the work product in one case in subsequent cases, and the way that you're seeing that be done that saves money, brings greater value, and kind of increases efficiency and throughput in the process.
Yeah, so I'll give you a real world example. You know, like many others, we're involved in litigation that's going on. And it's a big series of cases, and there's obviously a big overlap in the issues presented in those cases. And so if you look at the traditional, predictive coding approaches or TAR approaches, and we call it DISCO AI, what you're doing is lawyers review some set of documents in a case. The system is building and updating a model that tries to understand what lawyers mean by a certain tag or set of tags. And then you're using that model to predict the same case that lawyers haven't looked at would be coded if those lawyers reviewed them. That's sort of the basics of how it works. So all that we're doing differently is instead of training on part of a case and predicting on the rest of the documents in that case, we're letting our customers train on one case or three cases or five cases and predict on the documents in a different case. And so they're getting the benefit of the review that they've invested on those earlier cases, accelerate review on the next case. And we find that this works well across, you know, a wide range of areas, but opioids is a great example, right? You start out doing this review in, say, one state, then the next state's litigation comes in, and you have pre-trained models that know what kinds of documents you're looking for, except this time it's, for example, Tennessee rather than Arkansas. And so it's tremendous leverage, it's huge savings for folks in those cases. And we see the same thing when you look at, say, a law firm that has an FCPA practice, right? What kinds of documents are relevant to FCPA investigations and can reuse that trained model for other clients on other projects. The same is true across a huge range of different legal areas. I really think this is one of the kind of fundamentally game-changing things that's been made real in the e-discovery industry lately, right? There's no reason to start from ground zero when you've got a new case. And for a law firm, it's great because, look, you can package up your expertise, right? You can say that we, Law Firm X, have all these wonderful models that just like our lawyers, benefit from their experience on all the cases that have come before. And so we're able to address your new matter or even your ongoing compliance efforts in a way that's just radically more efficient than lawyers starting from scratch each time.
Are you seeing clients and law firms use that to accelerate the original investigation and maybe the negotiation of protocols with opposing counsel and that kind of application as well?
Yes, we're seeing that, and we're even seeing further to the left. You know, we've had a couple of financial services clients where these trained models and running them against, for example, their daily email journaling, so they can identify legal problems before there's an internal complaint, before there's a government request, before there's litigation or a dispute of any kind at all. It's kind of a proactive compliance program. And I think it highlights one of those trends we talked about earlier about the technology has advanced to the point where there is a huge advantage for the legal department of centralizing review in one platform. Right? Because if all the data is in one place, you get the benefit of all those learnings and you can run these models against the new data that's streaming in.
So you've talked a little bit about centralization as one, corporate reaction to dealing with the cost of e-discovery and the cost of review more specifically. What other creative solutions are you seeing your corporate clients do in reaction to the COVID-19 pandemic to, you know, accelerate their e-discovery performance, to gain cost savings? What else are you seeing your more forward-looking clients do in reaction to this real-world issue?
Yeah, it's a couple of things. We've noticed a big increase in concern about work from home, and not just work from home in the immediate, you know, work from home during the 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks that people were home, but also how do I get a plan in place now so that if there's a, you know, God forbid, a second wave in fall, we're not going to have a similar disruption when people have to work from home. How do I have a platform that's to this kind of business interruption. So that's been a big focus area. But really, you know, in terms of cost savings, that's not so different post-COVID than it's just maybe getting a little bit more attention now. But our messages there haven't changed, right? Number one is, you know, any client who wants to make the move to DISCO or a similar platform will immediately pay for the move savings and review cost, right? That's the number one driver. And then second is with a platform like DISCO, right, it's possible to get really prescriptive with internal teams and outside counsel about the work, how analytics are used, what's our way of handling litigation. And we find that, again, centralizing that and putting clear process around it can often lead to material acceleration in time to case resolution and reduction in the total cost of disputes.
You know, one thing that you'd have to, if you were in the discovery space over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, and you didn't notice DISCO's successive round of funding, you just weren't paying attention, right? I mean, you guys, I think I read that you have about $130 million of funding, which puts you pretty high up there in terms of legal tech, not just e-discovery tech, but legal tech and the private equity funding that you've gotten. What do you kind of attribute your success there? What's your secret to getting such private equity notice and believing in the vision that you have for this company? What's been your secret to success on getting all that funding?
I hate to say there's no kind of magic recipe for fundraising other than great growth numbers. And so we've been lucky enough, I think, to ride this overall industry transition away from the old ways of doing things to, again, integrated cloud platforms. And so, you know, we've, on a year-over-year basis, we've more than doubled revenue every year since inception. And so, with those kinds of growth numbers, investors are interested. I think more fundamentally, though, if you look at legal software, you look at the legal kind of across all major corporations, it's one of the last functions that doesn't have a really big software company providing a system of record, right? If you look at sales has Salesforce, marketing has Marketo, support has Zendesk, even things like sales tax administration have Avalara, right? But legal doesn't have anything that kind of fills that role. And so that's what we aim to be as we continue to grow the company. And, you know, whether it's us or someone else, I think that's a big prize that's out there, and that prize is what's attracting a lot of the investment dollars that are flying into legal tech. It's been great, by the way, to see the change between 2012, 2013, when we first raised money, and now. Because back then, I would say, you know, nobody wanted to invest in legal tech. They would say things like lawyers are Luddites, they're slow to adopt. And, you know, I never bought that. And I, not just us, but lots of other companies in the space who have proven that way of thinking to be wrong over the past few years. So that legal tech is, I think, now one of the hottest areas for venture capital and private equity.
So obviously, I follow a lot of social media, and in my connections, I see a lot about DISCO for Justice, which I understand. I'm actually friends with Drew Lewis. I understand that DISCO for Justice serves the plaintiff's bar and kind of looks to provide e-discovery services to the particularized needs of the plaintiff's bar. I actually think you mentioned opioid litigation earlier, which I take to be part of the DISCO for Justice services that DISCO provides. Tell me a little bit about insights that you've gotten from serving the plaintiff's bar that has helped your overall software kind of roadmap and next steps. Like, what have you learned from the plaintiff's bar that you've baked into your product that's unique from that service offering?
Yeah, I'm really proud of the business that Drew and Jonathan built at DISCO for Justice, which is our practice aimed plaintiff's bar. Of course, we represent. Our technology is used by all sides in lots of disputes. And nowadays, we're often literally on both sides of the case in the same way Westlaw or Lexis are. What's nice about working with plaintiffs is that their focus is on later part of the litigation, right? If you, what I mean by that is, if you think about e-discovery, there's really two big things that people are trying to do. The first is to comply with their discovery obligations, right? To produce everything that's responsive and not privileged in a defensible way. And the second is to actually find evidence, right? To find the evidence that will inform settlement negotiations, that will be used in depositions, and will be used in trial. And if there's one thing to summarize about the difference between the defense bar and the plaintiff's bar, I would say the plaintiff's bar really has a laser focus on that second use case, right? How can we most efficiently use the technology to find evidence that will either use to negotiate a fair settlement of claims or that will actually be used in depositions and in trial? If you look at features like search visualization or DISCO AI applied to wide ranges of issue tags, or even the fact that we make it possible to get meaningful predictions with as few as 50 inputs, right? So it's possible to use DISCO AI outside the context of a big managed review, or features like exhibit sets that are oriented around trial presentation. Many of these have been pushed heavily by our plaintiff side customers. Another area where plaintiffs have been useful is in collaboration, permissioning, and that kind of suite of features. And the reason is that, as you know, a lot of these big cases are handled by a kind of consortium of different plaintiffs firms working together. And so it's the, you know, it's the plaintiff side equivalent of a joint defense group on the defense side. And so those two use cases, JDGs and plaintiff steering committees, have really helped us in developing the collaboration and permissioning tools that let people who are working together share a database, but perhaps control access to specific kinds of work product based on.
You know, which leads me into my next question. I think when you were talking about DISCO at the very beginning, you mentioned Case Builder, which is one, I think, one of the newest rollouts, I believe, in January of this year, that allows some transcript management, some linking of video, and managing deposition transcripts. Of course, you're not the first entrant into that area. There's been some other attempts over the years from some of the biggest names in the business, and then some technology startups that have been really geared around that fact management part of the case. What is it about that part of the case that causes you to want to invest, even in light of the history of the lack of, of kind of a wholesale adoption of those prior tools? What's causing you to want to invest there, and why do you think DISCO's product has a better chance of success?
You know, it's interesting. At DISCO, we have this really deep focus on product and design, and we don't rush things through our build process to meet deadlines, right? We're much more focused on getting things right than on the market. And so if you look at eDiscovery, it's hard to name any feature where we're first to market. And yet the combined experience of what we've built, many people find to be very different. And so it's, you often get the reaction, well, you're not first, but you're the first people to do it right. And so that's kind of how we think about the Case Builder space. We really think it hasn't been there. And so first, what do I mean by Case Builder? Well, we think of it as kind of three layers of software. First is a tool to organize all the raw materials in a case, right? The pleadings, the correspondence, the settlement offers, and of course the e-discovery, right? So get that all in a place where it's searchable, where it's very easy to pull things up, where it's automatically updated, and get it out of the shelves of lawyers' offices that are being updated manually. That's number one. And number two is to provide a layer of tools for lawyers to do their analysis work that goes into developing a case. Things like cutting evidence, identifying critical events, building timelines, building a proof table, creating jury charges, creating witness dossiers, doing depo outlines and depo summaries, right? So it's a dedicated suite of tools that replaces when I was in practice, it doesn't replace any of the legacy tools. What it does is replace Microsoft Word and Excel and email and, you know, the memory of the fifth year associate who absolutely cannot take another job until this case is over, right? And then layer three is that kind of dashboarding layer. If I'm a senior lawyer or if I'm a client, I want to be able at a glance to see what's the status of this case, where is our case strong, where is it weak, what are the status of settlement negotiations, and what. So that's kind of the problem and the scope of the product, right? We've started out by attacking depositions. You'll see the product broaden from there. In terms of why it's different, first, again, is this idea that DISCO pretty uniquely combines a willingness to invest in heavy with also a deep understanding of how lawyers work, what their workflow is like, and it shows in the user experience of our eDiscovery product. We think you'll see that same difference in the CaseBuilder product. The second big thing is, of course, that we what we think is the best eDiscovery platform in the market. And so unlike many of the pure play CaseBuilder participants, we're able to offer really deep integration with a market-leading eDiscovery platform. If you think about the evidence in most modern commercial cases, the biggest category of evidence by far is in eDiscovery, followed by depositions. We've got those things cornered, and so we're able to offer an integrated experience that's difficult for a lot of other people to offer. And then third is that we take CaseBuilder seriously. And what I mean by that is if you're a lawyer, especially if you're a more senior lawyer, you're going to spend a lot more time in CaseBuilder doing the kinds of things that CaseBuilder helps you with than you will in eDiscovery. I think too many people in the space who are coming at this from an eDiscovery point of view, they try to bolt on a few features here and there to help with case development, but they don't regard it as a first order product, right? We think it's a first order product. It's as big or bigger than DISCO eDiscovery. And I think as the product grows, you'll see that difference compound.
Looking forward and kind of getting your crystal ball out that you obviously had in 2012, right? And looking forward over the next, you pick the period, 6, 12, 18 months, what do you think are going to be some major developments in the e-discovery space and then more generally in the legal tech space that we can expect to see as the market kind of reacts to the pandemic and just the industry just grows its normal course?
In e-discovery, I think there are going to be two trends. Number one is the accelerated adoption of a centralized cloud platform. If you are a corporate legal department today, you want to make sure that you at the outside counsel can work from anywhere without interruption, and you want to make sure that you know where your data is, who has access to it, and what's happening. And you know, I think you see our competitors trying to copy some of the things that we brought into the space now. I think there's actually broad alignment that that's the way the market is heading. And I think that trend is only going to accelerate over the next couple of years. Second is, I think, an increased focus on improving the bottom line by improving not e-discovery, but review. Right? The biggest impact an e-discovery product can have is by reducing the time and money spent on review. And that's why you've seen DISCO invest so heavily in our managed review offering and in things like CrossMatter AI, Box AI, that really reduce the amount of time lawyers are spending doing the fairly mechanical task of finding evidence and increasing the amount of time that lawyers spend on negotiating resolutions, arguing cases, the things that you and I went to school to do. I think you'll see both of those trends accelerate pretty quickly.
What about in legal tech more specifically? Anything, any predictions?
Legal tech is super exciting, right? I mean, I've got this thing that I like to talk to people about that I call my legal technology grid. And it has, you know, the rows are things like litigation, transactions, advisory work, some of the things that lawyers do. And the columns are things like figuring out what the law is, what the rules of law are, figuring out the facts, doing things, whether it's filing a brief or papering a deal, and process, right? And if you think about the intersection of those columns and those rows, each of those cells is an opportunity for legal technology. And really the only ones that are big businesses today are the kind of research for litigation space, Westlaw and Lexis, and finding facts for litigation space, which is eDiscovery. But the whole rest of that grid is a tremendous opportunity for startups and more established companies. And you see, this is what's, we talked about investment in legal technology a little bit ago. This is what's so fun to see, right? You've got all these companies working on things like contract automation, contract management, automated compliance, help drafting briefs and citing the right authority for the particular jurisdiction or judge that you're in front of. And so I think what you're going to see is kind of a boom in these early stage companies that are experimenting in different areas of legal technology. And then after that, we'll begin to see consolidation, because I think the ultimate right answer here is not that I'm a legal department or I'm a law firm and I have 100 different legal technology relationships. The right answer is what we have in sales, where right, there's going to be a platform of record in legal. And obviously, we're hoping that's us, but lots of people are competing to be that company. And so seeing who emerges as the winner in that competition is going to be really exciting. And it's going to happen, I think, a lot more quickly than people anticipate over the next 5 years.
Do you have any teasers that you can share about where DISCO's going in the foreseeable future, things that aren't necessarily already part of your product? Any teasers that you can give us?
Yeah, we've talked about a bit about some of them. But we're investing heavily in the space that we call AI and analytics. So how do we improve the performance of DISCO AI models using some of the latest BERT research out of Google? How do we invest in making cross-matter model sharing work well? And how do we increase our box models where you don't have to review anything, whether in an old matter or in a new matter? We're also bringing to market shortly what I think is a tremendous improvement in the feature that other people call topic clustering. But it's basically, how do I get a million documents and have the system tell me what's in them before I look at any of them, right? I think we've made a fundamental improvement in the way that's done that'll be coming to market later this year. And then we are continuing to invest in that the ability of corporates to centrally manage their data. Right. So things like integrated ECA, things like cross-matter vault, so that if I have frequent flyer witnesses whose documents are used many times, I can reuse that work product, things like connectors into cloud storage systems.
Okay, my last looking forward question, if you were to predict the one or two or three things that a corporate counsel is going to be measuring the success of their e-discovery program management on in, say, 18 months or 12 months, what are those key things that you think they're going to be measuring when we get out that far in terms of how they're winning in their e-discovery and review management?
So number one is reducing time to resolution. And this, you have to remember that however much money is spent on e-discovery and review, there's obviously more money at stake in the underlying litigation, right? Or you wouldn't be willing to spend money on e-discovery and legal fees. And so things that both lawyers and e-discovery software companies can do to accelerate the time to resolution of the underlying dispute on fair terms, that's to me the number one metric. Number two is reducing the total spend on litigation. And again, I think the main needle here is the total spend on review, because that's a number that for most companies out there, I know from experience, using the right software can reduce that by 50%. And number three is adoption of the technology. I think what we've seen is a lot of these analytics plugins or kind of supplemental tools, they look interesting in a marketing demonstration, but because the user experience is not integrated, right? It's not one integrated experience, they're often not really adopted by outside counsel or by case teams. And so you've kind of paid the money, but you're not getting the benefit. And so I think there'll be an increased focus in this climate on what are the tools you're paying for, which ones are actually being used, and what is the ROI on.
All right, so now I have three kind of final questions before any parting thoughts that you might have, and this is more of our lightning round, Kiwi, all right? So my first question is there a particular business leader that you admire? Who is that, and kind of what are their particular traits that draws you to them as kind of what you admire about them?
The first one that comes to mind is Bill Gates. I think a couple of interesting things here, but I'll point out two. Number one is well into his tenure as CEO of Microsoft, Gates would sit in product meetings and dive deep, right, on the details of how Excel works or how a new feature was going to work. And I think that level of obsession with product is absolutely critical today when end users are frankly in charge, right? They can pick the software that they want to use, and they're going to pick software what feels like to them a magical experience. Number two is what Microsoft did better than any other company, right, is build an ecosystem of people who were able to build amazing businesses powered by Microsoft. And so when we think about how we are working with some of the larger channel partners, services partners in this space, we really look to companies like Microsoft, but also places like Intel, you know, there are many others, as exemplars of how that can be done well in a way that's beneficial for everybody.
All right. Second question, what's the last podcast that you listened to, even if it's a guilty pleasure?
I have to admit, I'm not a podcast guy. I don't think I've ever really listened to a podcast except someone recommended this wine podcast. I've forgotten the name of it, but it's a guy who goes and visits different vineyards in France and talks to the owners and, you know, how what goes into the specific production methods they use. I listened to an episode of that years ago.
The last one is, what's the last book, business or fiction, that you just couldn't put down that you would actually recommend to the listeners?
Well, you know, my go-to when I get that question is, I like biographies, and Robert Caro has a wonderful biography of Lyndon Johnson, and specifically volume 3 is called Master of the Senate, and it's about Johnson's time in the Senate, and his work to get the Civil Rights Act passed. And it's an absolutely phenomenal book, great writing. It's a very important period of our history.
Thanks for joining us on the Lean Discovery Applied podcast, Season 1, Sitting with the C-Suite. Please rate and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. You can also visit us online at www.leandiscoveryblog.com, where we have additional content and videos of the interviews. Lean Discovery Applied is hosted by Clinton Sanko, eDiscovery Officer of Baker Donaldson. This program is not intended as an endorsement and does not constitute legal advice. Thanks to Baker Donaldson, a leader in innovative legal services, for supporting this podcast, to the guests, and to you, the listener. See you next time.